I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times.
So here's the deal. You built a great fortune. Good for you. I guarantee. You built it at least in part using workers all of us help pay to educate. Getting your goods to market on roads and bridges, all of us help pay to build. We're Americans. We want to make these investments. All we're saying is when you make it big, pitch in 2 cents so everybody else gets a chance to make it.
That's from an ad by Senator Elizabeth Warren about her wealth tax proposal on billionaires. She and another presidential contender, Senator Bernie Sanders, have put billionaires in their crosshairs, saying the ultra-rich need to put more back in the system by paying more taxes. Here's Sanders on ABC News earlier this month.
But I happen to believe the American people are sick and tired of the power and arrogance of a billionaire class which increasingly controls not only the economic life of this country, but the political life of this country.
Sanders has also said there should be no billionaires. Not surprisingly, some billionaires are not happy about all this negative attention. Here's Leon Cooperman, the CEO of Omega Corporation.
It's just the wrong idea. It's a bankrupt concept. And I think that her and Bernie Sanders are presenting a lot of ideas to the public which are morally and socially bankrupt.
Tom Steyer, who was an actual billionaire, is running for president, and another billionaire, Michael Bloomberg, has indicated he's going to run, and there's a billionaire in the White House. So is having a growing number of billionaires who are getting wealthier every year a positive sign about the strength and resilience of the economy, or do billionaires hurt the country by exacerbating inequality and giving the rich outsized power and political influence? Now, keep in mind, the median household income in the U.S. is $63,000. While the five richest men in the U.S. are worth together $435 billion. That's according to this year's Forbes 400. Well, joining our conversation is Philip Fan, and he's the Alonzo and Virginia Decker Professor of Strategy and Entrepreneurship at the Johns Hopkins Carey Business School. And Philip Fan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's been quite an interesting conversation, I'm sure.
I'm sure it is. And I hope we can get you on a slightly better phone line, but we will see if we can carry on. Let me get Michael Linden in on the conversation. He's joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C., and he's executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative, also a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. Michael Linden, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
Michael, let me begin with you, and then, Philip, I want to put this to you as well. Michael, do billionaires owe the rest of us for helping them acquire such wealth? In a sense, quoting from Senator Warren.
Yes. I mean, in a simple, very simple way, yes, they do. I mean, some of the, you know, if you think about the billionaires at the very top of the Forbes 400 list, Bezos and Zuckerman and Zuckerberg. Zuckerman is somebody else talking about billionaires. Zuckerberg, Gates. These people made their money in those three cases based on, for example, the internet, which was a federally funded program that we all paid for that has created a lot of value for people, and they benefited from it. And there's lots of other ways that billionaires grown their wealth and their money through public investments, through public workers. And yes, they absolutely owe the rest of us for some part of their success.
And we'll talk about what you think they owe us. But Philip Fan, let me get you in on the conversation. Essentially the same question. Do you think billionaires owe the rest of us for helping them get so wealthy?
I think it depends on what you mean by owe us, right? I mean, billionaires, you know, people, many of them may have started a little bit better than us. Others started with very little. And they took risks. They saw opportunities. And if all of us did the same thing, we probably, you know, would have had the same kind of opportunity. They were willing to take a risk, sometimes with their own capital, sometimes with others. Some of them got lucky, right? But it isn't like as though public workers were not paid for their labor. It isn't like as though their employees were working for free. And it isn't like as though anything that they did was guaranteed of success. In fact, for every billionaire that was successful, there are probably hundreds of other people that tried and did not succeed, but continued to try precisely because of the hope and the goal of becoming a billionaire. So I think that billionaires generally are good for the economy because they give the rest of us something to aim at. Imagine if everybody stopped trying, that every time you tried something and you were successful, it was taken away from you. Why would anybody do anything? And, you know, there are many economies in the world that have tried confiscating wealth, but ultimately, you know, they gave up, whether it's Sweden, the UK. Let me jump in here, and I
apologize to our listeners because this is not the greatest phone line. He is in Mexico. It's the only line we have, but we will carry on. And I know, Michael Linden, you want to jump in and say something. I mean, I think the question is, and it's important to have, I think, a reasonable conversation about billionaires because they do exist. They're not all cut from the same cloth, and some have gotten their money in very different kinds of ways, and some, frankly, have given away some of their money, while others are clearly interested in just holding on to what they have. But taking what Philip Fan said there to you, Michael Linden, are billionaires, are they people that are just sort of better business people than the rest of us, or is it luck, or do we have a system that really favors them?
I mean, it's mostly a lot of luck in a system that favors people who already have a lot, that helps them accumulate more. I mean, the thing to understand is that billionaires, no one earns $1 billion in the way that we think of the word earn, where they like contribute and they do more and they innovate more the way that Philip is talking about, and that the economy just rewards them with $1 billion. You can earn $1 million or even tens of millions of dollars, but at a certain point, once you've accumulated so much wealth, it just starts accumulating on its own. And it's like a boulder rolling down the hill. Once it's picking up steam, it just goes on its own. And so the only way to get to $1 billion is using your power and privilege and the sort of wealth you've already created to create more. And so it's not that the billionaires are so much smarter than everybody, that they're so incredible and that they're just some superheroes who figured out some ways. It's that some of them did some really great things, mm-hmm. and built great companies or built really large fortunes, but then the fortunes take on the life of their own. And in economic terms, we call that as excess profits or rents. It's money that they are not earning. It's they are extracting. They are using their power and their position in the economy to get more than what they are, quote unquote, owed. And so it's not the case that billionaires are, you know, just there are paragons that we should all aspire to. That isn't true. And when the country was more equal, we still had successful people. We still had people striving and creating. You know, Bill Gates started his company when tax rates were much, much higher. So did Steve Jobs. So did Warren Buffett. The idea that we ask more of them and that will somehow discourage future entrepreneurs is not borne out by the data.
Well, let me follow up. And we're trying to get Phil back on a better phone line, but let me follow up with what you just said. So let's say, you know, someone has made, you know, 50 or let's say 25 or even say $10 million, not billion, but million dollars. What is that thing that happens that kind of catapults them or moves them from the millionaire class to the billionaire class? Is it our tax system? Is it having political connections that seems to come with wealth and power?
Right. Yeah, it's all of those things. It's also their market position. So we know, for example, that the market today is much more concentrated. There are fewer large corporations that take up more of the overall market than there used to be in all sorts of areas. And once you've done that, you basically have power over the marketplace, and you can extract more and more excess profits. But yes, it's also political connections. Yes, it's the tax code. If you think about how billionaires make their money, billionaires make their money differently from the rest of us. They don't make their money through wages and salaries for the most part. They make their money through capital income, the appreciation of their assets, stock or real estate. They make their money through business income. They make their money through dividends. And all of those kinds of income are taxed at lower rates than regular income, which is kind of an amazing thing when you think about it, right? So the way that billionaires make their money is taxed at lower rates than the way that everybody else makes their money. So once you get up to a certain level, not only are you making all this money from your position in the economy and your sort of your political connections and you're paying, you know, you're paying lobbyists to help you get special rules in the regulations or in the tax code, but the overall tax system encourages you to do that by rewarding people at the very top with lower rates.
Well, Phil, let me get you in on the conversation. And Philip Fan, hopefully we've got you back on a better line, because I want to make sure our listeners can hear both of your perspectives. And we were just talking about with Michael Linden about sort of how someone goes from being, let's say, a millionaire to a billionaire. And what Michael was saying is that in many ways, the money they make is through capital investments rather than the kind of wages and salaries that we associate oftentimes with working. How do you see how someone becomes a billionaire?
Well, I think, you know, so Michael is right, right? There's clearly an element of luck, and luck is not necessarily normally distributed in an economy. But so imagine that nobody has any luck, right? That all we did was work for wages. Who are we going to work for, right? I mean, there has to be the capitalist class that gathers the resources, that takes the risk, that takes a shot, probably fails. I mean, for every billionaire, as I said earlier, there are probably hundreds of people that tried that didn't succeed. So you're going to punish the person that succeeds. And so essentially what we're talking about is that there are certain more legitimate forms of income than others. And the idea that certain kinds of income or certain ways of earning money are less legitimate or less acceptable in others, it's sort of a very weird way of thinking about how one makes money. I mean, so think of somebody like Jack Ma, all right? Let's move away from the U.S. So Jack Ma is the founder of Alibaba. He was a
This is in China.
When he started, right? In China, right? Which is not exactly a country that we claim to be a roaring capitalist economy, right? This is probably the most, you know, well-organized socialist communist country in the world. And you have people like Jack Ma and others that have become billionaires, essentially, you know, partially by their own hard work, a lot of times by luck. You know, they identified a trend in online shopping, much like Amazon.com, and created Alibaba, which is a supply chain network that connects buyers and sellers, both in the industrial as well as the consumer space. And he got rich out of that. Now, is he getting punished? No. In fact, he's been held up as an example of an economy, you know, that works. And everybody looks at that example and says, I want to be like that. That's what drives innovation, risk-taking in the economy. If you don't have examples, if you don't have people that succeed beyond their wildest dreams, then you're basically left with a stagnated economy.
I mean,
and I think overall that's bad, because no one's going to get employed. You know, all these wage earners that are supposedly earning their money in very legitimate ways, they will not have,
you know what?
Not have jobs.
Phil, I hate to jump in here, and there is a delay, which is creating a bit of a communication problem here. That's Philip Fan, and he joins us actually from Mexico, where he is. He's also a professor at Johns Hopkins Carey Business School. Michael Linden joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C., executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative. Stay with us. We're talking about billionaires. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscoena, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We are talking about billionaires during this hour, and whether billionaires are a sign of the strength and resilience of the U.S. economy, or whether they're a sign of the inequality income divide, and whether the rich just have too much power and political influence in the country. And again, we are looking for a better phone line for our guest, Philip Fan, and we do have Michael Linden with us. He's Executive Director of the Groundwork Collaborative and a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. A couple of things I want to pick up on, and it's sort of I feel badly that we're talking behind his back, but nonetheless, Philip Fan talked about billionaires as job creators, but also seeming to indicate that the money that billionaires make by, let's say, the stock market should be treated differently from the kind of way we treat income that comes from wages and the like. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, well, let's start with the idea that billionaires are job creators, and that's just not true. Jobs don't come from billionaires. They don't come from, you know, a CEO sitting in a boardroom and deciding, today we're going to create 12 jobs. You know, that's not how it works. The way that we get jobs is through a combination of strong, broad-based consumer demand for goods and services, customers create jobs, and workers who are getting more and more productive who can produce more with less. That's how you create an economy that is producing shared prosperity for everybody and good jobs that are, you know, all the way to go around. And sometimes people will get rich off of a system like that, and that's fine. Nobody is saying that there's no rich people, but the idea that rich people are the job creators is absolutely wrong.
Well, let me just jump in there, because let's look at Jeff Bezos, who apparently is the richest man in the world, and look at the numbers of jobs, whether they're good jobs or bad jobs. Look at the number of jobs that Amazon has created.
Well, but Amazon didn't create the jobs, right? The customers who go to Amazon create the jobs. If there's nobody there to buy any of those goods and services from Amazon, then there's no jobs. And so if you create an economy in which all of the gains are going to people at the very, very top, ultimately what you're doing is undermining the strength of that economy itself. And actually, we've seen so much new incredible economic evidence that income inequality and wealth inequality is itself a drag on the overall economy.
Well, if we had no billionaires, and I realize that, you know, that's a fantasy question, but if we had no billionaires, would we have less poverty in this country? Would we have less of a economic income divide that we have?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the question of, like, if we set up an economic system in which it was much less likely that one person would accumulate $1 billion, in that system, is there less poverty? Is there less inequality? Yes, almost certainly, because the money doesn't disappear, right? Because this gets back to what I was saying before. It's not that billionaires are earning this money based on the contributions to the economy. That may have been true at the beginning of their career. That may have been true for their first several $100 million, who knows? Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, that money is, they are taking that money from other people in a very real sense. So that's what we mean by extracting excess profits or economic rents. That is money that really should not be going to them, but it's going to them because of their power and privilege. So if we tax them more, both to discourage the accumulation of excess wealth and to reinvest in regular people, in everyday people, in the economies all over the country, the local communities, you know, we're going to have a system that's much, much better off for most people and will be stronger for everyone.
Let me play a clip. This is Microsoft CEO Bill Gates at an event actually earlier this month, and he's speaking to New York Times reporter Andrew Ross Sorkin, talking about Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax. Let's give it a listen.
I've paid over $10 billion in taxes. I paid more than anyone in taxes. But I, you know, I'm glad to have paid, you know, if I'd had to pay $20 billion, it's fine. But, you know, when you say I should pay $100 billion, okay, then I'm starting to do a little math about what I have left over. Sorry, I'm just kidding.
I'm not sure if he was just kidding or not.
Yeah, he doesn't sound like he was just kidding.
let me just quickly reintroduce both of our guests. Michael Linden, joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C., executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative, also a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. Also with us, Philip Fan, and he's the Alonzo and Virginia Decker Professor of Strategy and Entrepreneurship at the Johns Hopkins Carey Business School, and both of them joining us on Radio Times as we talk about billionaires and whether they are good for the country or not so good for the country. And Philip Fan, I believe we have you back. And just responding to that clip from Bill Gates, where he says, look, I've paid billions of dollars worth of taxes. The question is, how much taxes are too much taxes? And is there an answer to that question?
Well, I think the real question is how much taxes is enough, right? Because I think the conversation we're having here is about drawing the lines. You know, a few million is okay, a few hundred million is okay, a billion is not okay. Who makes that determination? And this idea somehow that by, you know, decreasing the wealthy in order to spread the money to everybody else makes all of us better off. I mean, I think that notion has been tried and tested and hasn't actually worked very well, right? I mean, as I've said earlier on, there are many countries in the world that have had top tax brackets of 97%, 67%, and ultimately realize that what they end up with is capital flight. You see, the problem with tax plans that extract or confiscate is that they assume that the people that they're taxing are going to allow themselves to be taxed, right? I mean, that's the problem. So when Elizabeth Warren says we're going to tax, you know, the billionaires, they're assuming that the billionaires are going to simply sit there and allow themselves to be taxed. And we know that's not the case. I mean, every study has pretty much conclusively shown that anytime you increase the top marginal tax rate, capital flight occurs. And
that's
the problem
just,
with capital flight,
right.
Wait, but the problem with capital flight is that, you know, I mean, unless your capital is in real estate, but even then, you know, some capital is, quite a lot of capital is fungible. And of course, the problem with capital flight is then economic activity slows down because there's much less being reinvested in. So everybody's worse off. I would rather have a world in which there are a few, relatively speaking, you know, 40 people in 300 million is a few people being extremely rich and everybody else aims to reach the top, than for everybody to be pretty much the same and poor.
Let me just say one thing,
which if we're talking about Elizabeth Warren, we're talking about not taking away all the money that billionaires are making.
Right.
We're talking about
right.
2% tax on right. wealth. But let me give you a chance, Michael Linden, to weigh in on that.
Right. Like that, the people who defend billionaires want you to think that the choice is either between everybody has exactly the same and we're living in a communist dystopia, or we can only live in the system we have right now. Those are the only two choices. And that's just not true. We had top tax rates of 90% in this country, in the United States of America, in the 1950s. And actually, economic growth was faster during that period than it was now, than it is now. So the idea that we can't have a tax code that encourages hard work, that encourages and rewards innovation, and also discourages hoarding and extraction is wrong. We absolutely can do that. And the idea that rich people will simply take their business elsewhere is also wrong. We know that both from inter-country studies, but also interstate studies. When states raise taxes on rich people, very few rich people actually move. Yes, there are some high-profile examples. Donald Trump, for example, moving his residence to Florida. There are high-profile counterexamples, but studies, actual real overarching studies that show what happens, does that actually happen? And the reason is that when you have higher taxes and you're investing in things like education and infrastructure and worker protections and basic broad public services, that's actually where business creation happens, and that's where capital wants to be. So that's why the top tax rate is not what drives people away. Countries that underinvest and don't have broad and stable consumer demand and have extractive systems, that's where you end up in this vicious circle where rich just kept getting richer and everybody else is falling behind.
Well, and I don't want to get deep into the Trump taxes tax plan. Hold on just 1 minute. But just, I mean, it is pretty clear that wealthy people made out better from the Trump tax cut than millionaires and even middle class people as well. But
that's right. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Phil Fan, let me just go back to you. And if we're talking about billionaires and we're talking about people making even more money, I mean, you do have people like Oprah Winfrey. We've got it's a very broad mix of people. You can even throw in Kyle Jenner as well. I believe she's the newest billionaire that we have. And some of them are job creators, but a lot of them are not. And I wonder whether from your perspective, there are things that billionaires can do that they are not doing that would add to the rest of the economy and frankly help to lift some of these boats.
Well, so here's the thing, right? I mean, in most countries where there are billionaires, If you look at who, who created the museums? Who created the great museums, the great universities, you know, in America, right? These are the billionaires, right? And if you go to any country in which there are great institutions, whether it's culture, whether it's education, this idea that only government can build educational institutions, the best educational institutions in the United States, you know, were are private educational institutions that were funded by money that was made, you know, many times by, you know, mostly by billionaires, right?
Bloomberg himself has given over $2 billion.
Wait, let me finish.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, so the other thing too is this idea that somehow billionaires got to their money by, you know, through ill-gotten means or in ways that none of us have access to. Remember this: 90% of investments in the stock market today are not by individuals. They are by pension funds. They are by investment funds, insurance funds. Whose money is that? That's US, you know, your money, yeah. My money, you know, my retirement money. So this is the kind of money that is somehow deemed illegitimate because it was made off of stocks and bonds and not by hard work, blood and sweat and tears.
That's I don't think it's
very,
illegitimate.
Very hold on, right? Well, but that's what you're saying. People who earn money through capital gains somehow, you know, are paying less taxes and therefore it's unfair. Well, those of us with pension funds that have to depend on these things for retirement, which is, you know, most of the working population, are also making money through capital gains through these funds. So you're saying that you want to tax them too. In fact, there was a great article in the Wall Street Journal 2 days ago that basically said for some people, these so-called billionaires, if the Warren plan goes through, they're going to be paying more than 100% in taxes. Now, that's actually confiscatory. At that point, when you talk about extraction,
yeah.
that's extraction, right?
Clearly, 100% of someone's, you can't take people's all their money away.
That's exactly right.
Well, hold on. Let me give Michael Linden a chance to respond to that. And also this fact about philanthropy, whether philanthropy can replace government when it comes to providing services to the public. I'm thinking about the Giving Pledge. A number of billionaires have promised to give away, if not all their money, at least a large portion of their money, Michael, as a way to give back to the country.
Yeah, well, let me start with something that Philip said that I think is really important, which is he points to pension funds or retirement accounts as, you know, sort of everybody's invested in the stock market. And what he did not say, which is important, is that 50% of Americans do not own a single share of stock, even in retirement accounts. So most people do not have the money to invest in the stock market. This idea that we're all broadly invested in the stock market is not true. And 80% of the value of the stock market is owned by the top 10%. So it is not the case that everybody has the opportunity to just kind of use the money that they're making to invest in the stock market and get those lower rates that the rich people insistently say is their right to have lower rates on their income than everybody else. So that's an important corrective. As to whether or not philanthropy can fill in the gaps for what really should be public services, the answer is no. You know, Philip points to these great private university institutions as the paragons, but, you know, the real paragons were the public land-grant universities that educated millions and millions of Americans and made us this powerhouse of an economy where we had a broadly educated, high-skilled, innovative workforce where we made public education and higher education available to so many more people, and which we have underinvested in for the last 30 or 40 years. It's not Harvard that makes us great. You know, that's not what is that's great for people who go to Harvard, but it's not great for the vast majority of people. And giving
money. But are you saying
money,
we shouldn't have a Harvard? Sure,
we can have a Harvard. That's fine. It's not a choice between, there is no rich people. There are no rich people at all. And the system we have now, we can have a system where there are rich people, but they're not taking from everyone else. They're not making it harder for everyone else to succeed. And that is actually what is happening. And that's not something that I think Philip wants to acknowledge, and I understand that. But the evidence is very, very clear that extreme inequality is actually reducing overall economic growth. It is distorting the market. It blocks opportunity for people. And it does capture the political system to make it easier for those billionaires to protect their power and privilege.
Let me play one more clip. And Phil, I'll give you a chance to respond after this clip. This is J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon speaking to Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes about Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax.
So Elizabeth Warren said in Iowa the other day, our democracy has been hijacked by the rich and powerful. And you jumped in and said this week about her that she was vilifying successful people and having harsh words for Wall Street bankers.
What I was commenting on is that anything that vilifies people, I just don't like. I think that, you know, most people good, not all of them. I think you should vilify Nazis. But you shouldn't vilify people who worked hard to accomplish things. And so my comment is, I think it's American society. We're just attacking each other all the time.
Phil, you want to respond to that? Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, at what point do we decide that some people are better than others, that some people are more noble than others, that some people, you know, earn money in ways that are more legitimate than others? I mean, that is not the American ideal, right? I mean, the American ideal was you come to this country, you work hard. If you get lucky, you become fabulously wealthy. But other than that, right, you make a good living. And, you know, you're part of a system that rewards risk-taking and hard work. And, you know, everything that Michael says sounds very reasonable. The problem is, where do you draw the line? And who gets to draw the line? Elizabeth Warren, who probably never had to you know, complete a profit and loss statement, never had to pay a real salary, never had to worry about laying people off, you know, says, I get to draw the line. Does she, in fact, get to draw the line? Does she say that some of us, you know, have a right to wealth more than others, and if we get too rich, then somehow it is illegitimate? I mean, there is a very deep moral issue here beyond arguments of, you know, whether, you know, we should have more or less equality. I mean, every economy has a certain degree of equality inequality. We know that. And as an economy becomes richer, the wealth gap does grow. But how do you fix the wealth gap? Do you try to bring everybody up closer to the top, or you try to bring the people on top closer down to the bottom?
Well,
you know,
I'll tell you
so
what.
Again, you know, look at the China example.
Well, you know what, Phil, if you don't mind, only we have to take a very short break, and then we'll pick up on several things that you said. That's Philip Fan, also with us, Michael Linden. We are talking about billionaires on Radio Times. Today we've got some more clips. We got lots of comments as well. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and we are getting a moral and economic argument for and against billionaires. And again, our guests are Philip Fan. He is a professor of business at Johns Hopkins University. Also with us, Michael Linden, and he is an economist, executive director of the Groundwork Collective, and a fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. Michael, if you want to respond to what Phil was saying right before the break, which is that, and in many ways, I do think this is a moral issue about how money is distributed within an economy. Are billionaires, is there something sort of immoral about having hundreds of billionaires?
Yeah, I mean, I look at things through an economic lens. I look at the research, and I care about building an economy where people have real opportunity and people can, and people's living standards are going up and human beings are thriving. So it's not my natural state to talk about morals and ethics, but I'm a human being. And so, yes, I think it is. There is something fundamentally wrong with a system in which there are 600 people with more than $1 billion and we have, you know, tens of millions of people living in poverty. There's something fundamentally wrong about that. And I think most Americans would agree with that. Now, the question about how do we fix that and what do we do about that is a reasonable one. And I think there's different ideas, but it's not vilification. It's not punishment. It's not confiscatory to say you know, we are the wealthiest country in the world, and yet living standards for the bottom 50% of Americans have barely risen at all over the last 40 years. Life expectancy has begun to decline for the vast majority of Americans, which is absolutely remarkable in a system, in a country that is as wealthy as ours. The income gap, the racial wealth gap is enormous and growing. We've got incredible we've got incredible sort of economic devastation all over this country, and yet there are 600 people who have literally more money than they could ever possibly spend in their lifetime, in their children's lifetime. That's definitely a moral failing.
Let me read a couple of comments, and then, Phil, I'll give you a chance to respond. One from Nicole says, we're not even talking about getting rid of millionaires, though, just billionaires. A tweet from Teddy, no one earns $1 billion. One can only hoard that much wealth through the stolen wages of workers. That'll give you a perspective about how some people feel about our conversation. A tweet from Peter, Bill Gates is known for giving all his wealth away, yet despite his philanthropy, he's only gotten more wealthy. No individual should control that much wealth or influence. If billionaires become mere multimillionaires, society is not hurt. We would be better off to fund public services. A Facebook comment from Marcy. I think it's a more of a question of monopoly. There are very few ways to become a billionaire without having an antitrust issue. So, Phil, yeah, going back to you, I mean, I do think it is clear that we do not have the kind of mobility that I think we would want in a capitalist society, where people can move from those lower rungs into the higher or middle rungs of society. And I guess the question is, by having billionaires who do have more influence and power than the rest of us, whether that keeps people down.
Well, you know, that's very interesting that you said that. Did I hear correctly say that you don't think that there's as much mobility as there should be? I mean, the definition, yes, of what makes America great is precisely mobility. I mean, you know, where we are today in 2019 is a far cry from where we were in, you know, the 1950s, where there were billionaires, right? You know, by today's standards. And I would say that a vast majority of the population are much better. The middle class is much, much bigger today than it was, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago. So there's definitely mobility. Now, you know, it may not be the kind that we would like to see, but again, that's a value judgment. And this idea that somehow, you know, people became billionaires because of some, you know, a privilege conferred on them by society, by government, that's simply wrong. As I said, for every billionaire that we see today, what we do not see are the hundreds of thousands of people that tried to get there and didn't succeed. They took a risk, right? Now, imagine that it was not possible to become a billionaire. How much fewer people will try? I'm sure there are people who will continue to try, but my guess is that there will be a lot of people who are willing to try, that they might make different choices, right? And some of these choices may or may not be good for society. My guess is that given just pure random chance, you're going to have a lot less economic development. I mean, you know, pick anybody. You know, Michael Bloomberg is a great example, right? He's a billionaire. He got to where he was because he came up with a new way of distributing information, right, that nobody thought about. And he took a shot. He could have failed, but he succeeded. So at what point do we say to Michael Bloomberg, you've made enough, the rest of it belongs to us? Well, who's us?
Let me give our guest, Michael Linden, a chance to weigh in on that. Michael, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I feel like I need to correct some of this, because it's not true that the middle class is larger today than it was before. The share
as
of the
a
income,
percentage of population, you're saying?
Or sort of as a share of all the income. You know, the share of income going to the middle has declined over the last 40 years. And, you know, median household income has risen very slowly and much slower than the income for people at the extraordinary top. So, you know, I think there's different ways to measure well-being, but I think we can all agree that the middle and the bottom in this country is struggling and has been struggling for quite some time, while people at the very, very top are doing very, very well. I'm happy to put that question to the broad American public and ask them, do you think the middle class is doing well? Because I'm pretty sure they're going to agree with me and not with Philip on that point. So I just think that's an important point, because it's not that the billionaires did not create prosperity for all. You know, there are a lot of people who are really, really struggling.
Well, and another point that Phil was making, I'll give you a chance, Michael, to respond to that, which is that if we didn't have billionaires, would people be taking the kind of risks that some billionaires have taken, Michael Bloomberg being an example, and not sort of, you know, put it all out there and see if they could make that lot of money?
Yeah, I think we would absolutely still have lots of people taking risks, lots of people being entrepreneurs. I think if you talk to small business owners, if you talk to people who are trying, if you talk to people who are just struggling every day, who have, you know, three or four side hustles and they're trying to make ends meet, they're not trying. They're taking lots of risks. They're working extremely hard. They're innovating every single day. And it's not because they want to be the next Michael Bloomberg. It's because they're trying to make ends meet. And that's still going to be true. And there's still going to be rewards to innovation in a system where there's a 2% wealth tax or the capital gains tax rate is the same as it is for wages and salaries. That's still going to be true in that system. The idea that a slightly higher tax rate on the richest 0.1% is going to diminish innovation is not true and not borne out by the actual empirical data.
Well, we have been talking a lot about Elizabeth Warren, and let me play one more clip. And this is Senator Warren being interviewed by Amy Goodman earlier this month.
Bernie Sanders says there should be no billionaires. Do you agree with that?
No.
Why not?
Look, somebody has a great idea and they follow it through and they work hard and they build something. Good for them. So here's my view. You make it to the top, to the tip top, then the answer is pay a wealth tax so that we can invest and create opportunities for everyone else. That's what my 2 cent wealth tax is
all
about.
The second man I want you to respond.
So, Phil, can you respond to that? I mean, we've heard from her several times during this hour, but she's the one that has put this wealth tax on the table here. What is wrong with what she just said?
So, you know, it's very deceptive, this 2%, because if you look at it very closely, what does this 2% actually represent? Everybody thinks, well, it's just 2 cents on the dollar. Well, not exactly. It depends on how you calculate this. So, for example, both she and Bernie and a couple of other, you know, candidates for the Democratic nomination have suggested that the so-called wealth tax or the capital gains tax should be calculated in what is known as a mark-to-market method, meaning that, you know, right now when we pay capital gains, typically that happens when we sell a piece of, you know, real estate or a property or a stock, right? What you're suggesting, and this is where it gets really deceptive, where the details actually do matter, is that you pay your capital gains tax on any gains you get, even if it's a paper gain, over the course of the year. Now, here's the problem, right? Let's say I made $1,000 in paper gain and I pay tax on that. What if I make a loss? Does the government give me back the money? Right? So I think that's part of the problem is, you know, they throw these numbers like 2%, 1%, 0.5%, and it sounds very nice and everybody's happy and, you know, we're not going to get rid of the billionaires. We're just going to tax them a little bit more. But it's the devil in the details. How are they actually going to get that money? And once you start talking about taxing wealth that has not been realized, in some sense almost taxing imaginary wealth, paper gain, then you get down a very slippery slope. Because the government is not going to pay the billionaires back if they lose money on investment. So what you have is a system in which we tax your success and you bear the risk for your failure.
Well,
how is that reasonable?
Okay, I think that's a fair question. Let me give Michael Linden a chance to respond.
Well, at the risk of getting too deep into tax policy, you know, most of these mark-to-market proposals would let you carry a loss forward. So it would not be a situation where you don't get that money back. It basically means if you have gains in the future, you can deduct the losses that you had before against them. So that's not really a problem. And so the other thing is that they're not really paper gain. You know, what Philip's talking about, first of all, these proposals would apply only to the very tippy top. So if you are one of the, you know, 20 or 30% of Americans who has a small investment account and you're making a little bit of money on capital appreciation over the course of the year, you're not affected by this at all. It's really only the people at the very, very top who have an enormous amount of money invested in capital, and they're appreciating every year over time massively, and they're never taxed on it. And I mean never, actually never, because if they pass those assets on to their heirs, the money gets treated as if it was starts over at zero. So if the heir sells it the next day, they pay zero tax on it. So that is an incredible, massive loophole that we've built into the system for extraordinarily wealthy people that the vast majority of Americans never have heard of, never need to think about because they don't have the money to take advantage of it. So, you know, taxing it as it is actually earned makes a ton of sense.
Let me read a couple more comments from our listeners. One from Mukhtadar Khan says, billionaires exist because we've created a taxation system that enables them to grow and survive. Perhaps we can use the tax system to encourage philanthropy in specific direction, things like public education or public health or even infrastructure. A tweet from Emily Gindelsberger. She wrote a book called On the Clock about working in low-wage jobs. She says, money above a certain point becomes like gold stars, a symbol of success rather than something one exchanges for goods and services. We have just a couple of more minutes before we have to end our conversation. To you, Philip Fan, looking ahead and going forward, of course, we don't know who's going to win in 2020, but do you think the system as it is a good capitalist system for the U.S. economy?
I think what I worry about is that there are obviously many social problems we're trying to solve. The tax system is probably the worst way to solve it, right? I mean, you can never write enough pages in a tax code to fix all of these problems. I think it would be much better if we can think about how we can appeal to the better nature, you know, of the entrepreneurs, the people who take risks and create wealth, yes, and create employment for the thousands, hundreds of thousands of others, such as ourselves. You know, how rather than use the tax system in a sort of a confiscatory or a punitive way, you know, how can we find other ways to, you know, encourage them to give back to society, many of whom already do, right? And those who don't, ultimately, I believe, will. I think that's a much better system than to figure out how to engineer every last penny from them, those on the tippy top. Well, you know, those on the tippy top also have options. And while it may be true that they might decide not to move their capital, I think beyond a certain range, just like Bill Gates says, when you start taxing $100 billion, that calls into question a whole different set of issues. And I, you know, worry about that. And I think all this talk about tax completely misses the point, which is how do we create wealth? Right. If we can create wealth in a sustainable way that benefits everyone rather than simply redistribute what already exists, you know, my guess is that we'll probably have a better future.
Well, and let me
so
give
that's,
Michael.
That's my concern.
Sure, no, I hear you. And let me give Michael Linden a chance to respond as well. And I just wanted to throw out the idea of a Scandinavian style country. I was thinking it's like Goldilocks, you know, not too rich, not too poor. But is that a model you think that we should aspire to?
Well, I think. Look, it's important to understand that billionaires who created and benefit from the system that we have now are not going to save us from that system. So depending on their better nature, as Philip put it, is a fantasy. They benefit from the system as it is now. They are the winners, and everybody else is struggling to keep up. And so they're not going to, out of the goodness of their hearts, fix the system for us. And in fact, a lot of the philanthropy that they give is designed to distract from the fact that the system is really set up to benefit them. And there's an incredible book by Anand Giridharadas called Winners Take All
that I strongly recommend. Yep.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. He makes this argument better than I ever could. But I think it's very, very persuasive. So I don't think that we can rely on the goodwill of billionaires to save us from the system that benefits billionaires.
I hate to put this at the very end of the show, Michael, but should we have no billionaires, as Bernie Sanders said?
I think what we want to have is a system. I'm not sure. What I do agree with Philip on is I don't think anybody should set an arbitrary level, and I don't think anybody has. But I think that billionaires are so far beyond what most of us can even conceive. They have so much money that it's actually very hard to conceive of what that looks like. What we need to have is a system that focuses on the real sources of wealth. And to Philip's point, creating wealth and opportunity. And those sources are everyday people, people who work hard and go to work and put food on their table and go to their local shops and innovate and create. And that's the sources of wealth, not billionaires.
Well, I appreciate you both joining us on Radio Times. Michael Linden, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. He's executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative. Philip Fan, thanks so much for joining us as well. Sorry about all those technical problems.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And he is an economist at Johns Hopkins University Business School. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times. And you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you for joining us.